Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. I think this will be an important podcast in the little series of podcasts that I've done because we are developing the work, just refining it. And okay, so the day that this insight came to me, I kid you not, I had a flood of ecstasy where I almost fell to my knees onto the floor. You have to kind of understand my journey. I've tried to explain it to you, but I went on this quest for enlightenment and I took that very seriously, as you can imagine. And then I bypassed. So there's been something gnawing at me for sure, which is, it's not how to end suffering. I know that. It's how do you explain this and help people see it? I think that's been the biggest challenge. So I was researching Freud, and Freud, when he came out in 1900 with, I think it's the Interpretation of Dreams, and he basically said emotional repression produces suffering, and he was essentially talking about the what became to be known as the pleasure-pain principle, although it was talked about before Freud. Freud is considered a foundational thinker on the pleasure-pain principle, or that emotional repression drives suffering. And I'm blogging on the Medium, and I highly encourage everyone that listens to this to go read at least the blog called Emotional Repression and the Pleasure-Pain Principle so that you can see the science around what happened after Freud. I've researched it. I've laid it all in front of me to see why, if Freud said that in 1900, are we still today resisting that message? Why is that? Why did I resist it? Why is there such a bypass around emotional repression? I mean, I know why, because we don't want to feel it. But is that really the answer? And it's part of it. But there's another way to answer this. If you go read my blogs, what Freud was trying to tell us, and so modern science has confirmed Freud. Even though there was a lot of criticism of Freud, nobody disputed, and I've even checked with this through a few databases and AI chats. Nobody has disputed Freud's basic foundational discovery. Emotional repression produces the duality, the shadows, it produces our external world for safety. It's safer just to believe things and, you know, create this duality than it is, this is how I interpret Freud, than it is to feel these buried emotions. He wouldn't have said it that way, but we're not stuck with the way he said it, just grateful that he did. And then he's also the foundational thinker on the pain pleasure principle. So I laid out all that research. So I laid all the research in therapy from before Freud, but from Freud, especially very detailed research all the way up to modern therapy. And then I did another line of research from Freud for every thinker who got in line with the pleasure pain principle and tried to explain it. And what I ended up finding is that both lineages became very, in a certain way, disconnected from Freud's discoveries. If it weren't for people like Bessel van der Kolk, who has come into like the therapeutic world and said, look, it's emotional repression driving suffering and you need present moment awareness. We have gotten somewhat disconnected as humans from Freud's first discovery is what I see. I have to say, especially in the line, because there are definitely some therapists that are somatic experiencers and, you know, they do that. So they don't fit into the category of what I feel is a disconnected interdisciplinary non-conversation that basically researchers came up and just disagreed with Freud without integrating it, without doing their own transformative work around buried emotions, positing theories that might have been just from the same repression that Freud was talking about. He's like saying, do your own work. And I think that's what we're learning, is that even though it's acceptable for people to posit theories now in modern society, without doing their own transformative work, I think in the future that will be considered archaic and just a part of our past. Because we're not going to transform as humans until we do the personal transformative work that Bessel van der Kolk is talking about. I think what he's saying, or at least the way he frames it, kind of frames it better than most spiritual teachings. Because he puts those two things together, which is what KI does. Awareness, processing, non-dual awareness, presence, and the processing of the root of suffering. Well, that's not where I'm going. I did all that criticism, or it's not criticism, it's like I love these thinkers. I have fans of lots of them, actually, because they all present something that's helpful. If you see it from an integrated perspective, you don't really, I'll tell you what, I can't love you unless I can disagree with you. If I can't disagree with you, then I'm being false with you. So if I'm critiquing teachings or theories out there, that means I'm loving those theories because they help. But there's also a limitation to them. And the critique is to pull people's attention to that because the limitation is always the embodiment issue to me. It's always like if the researcher would just go into their body and see buried emotions are creating their suffering, their theory would change. But they don't do it. And so they'll say it's dopamine. It's genes. It's the culture. It's that we have distressing thoughts at the surface and then, or it's cognitive dissonance. And all these things came up in therapy and in this line around pleasure pain mechanism. And to me, it's a bunch of disembodied people not processing their buried emotions and trying to tell us how reality is, which is absurd if you think about it. But in today's society, it's completely acceptable. So how do we move beyond where we are? Where it's been, Freud has had this out. The first few decades that he brought out this discovery, there was great resistance in society. And self-help, positive self-help books in the early 1900s became very popular. A few of them. That was like a wave or a trend. And Freud had to work hard and travel and do lectures to try to explain to people that the root of suffering is buried. But because he was talking about their buried emotions and leading with that, and because he was talking about sex and aggression, which I assume back then culturally, that wasn't something that people were open to, that people got away with criticizing Freud without realizing that they never disputed his initial discovery, his main foundational, which he's still known for, and which science has confirmed. That shows me a disconnection. If you're going to say something and I'm going to be in a conversation with you, I have to acknowledge what you've said. If I come with a disconnected response, this is why I think it's repression. Some of these thinkers, they didn't even check to see if they had buried emotions. They didn't even turn around to Freud's theory and say, oh, I wonder if it really is the buried emotions creating suffering. Instead, they just posit a different theory. And it's just like being in a relationship when you say something to somebody and you say, can you hear what I said first? And then they don't hear it and they're off in a different narrative. And I think that's our best evidence that repression has been driving humans to try to understand their reality. And now we have the science that says that creates suffering. So basically, if we sit here and pontificate about our experience, especially our emotional experience, without processing it, we create more anxiety. We create overwhelm. Now, what do we do with that? People are trying to talk about our experience, but they're not giving us tools. And then we're suffering over it because we're not in our bodies and we're not having a real conversation, an interdisciplinary embodied conversation about, okay, medicine, what do you have to contribute and what's your limitation? Therapy, what do you have to contribute? What's your limitation? Spirituality, what do you have to contribute? What's your limitation? Because everybody has a partial view, but nobody wants to admit that. Because every theory is like Richard, I think Nolan said, or Dolan, he said, if you look back at history, we always think that we have it right now. And there's a long string of that where and then right now we think we have it right. And that's not how consciousness works. These theories are just, we're identified with them. It's like the latest trend. But if we look deep in our experience, put trends aside, put disconnected theories aside that are not embodied, And we ask for personal transformation for people who go into this question of where does it all come from? Then we find out Freud and science today is right. When we trust our experience. He's not right. He's just trying to get us on the right track. But because we had trauma and we didn't know it, humans, we couldn't hear it. That's all. And maybe now we can hear it, but some people won't because it just hits too close to home. And, you know, everybody, as I said, has a right to suffer because it does keep us safe. Even though it's painful, you know, your system tells you it keeps you safe. So if you want to go with that conditioning, you have every right to just regulate your nervous system in different ways through suffering for the rest of your life or through managing that suffering. But what Freud and Bessel van der Kolk and I think KI and different figures throughout history are trying to point to is that we really have the opportunity to transform. Non-duality certainly contributes to that conversation, bypass aside, which they bypassed emotional repression. So that's a big issue. But that's part of, they come to the table too. They can't come to the table as ultimate truth. That's what I've learned. Because until people process their buried emotions, they'll use spirituality to disconnect from humans. I did it. And, you know, that's what I see in a lot of spirituality is that it's just not open to a debate, a conversation, relationship, authenticity, to say, in what ways are the non-dual concepts limiting, encouraging avoidance, not science-based, disconnected from even Freud or, you know, current science, and therefore potentially harming people, even if you can't see it on its face. That's a question that every single institution, including ours, constantly should ask. We ask it all the time to be self-reflective because we're working with the root of suffering. So I'm constantly saying we need people to be taking care of their nervous systems, first and foremost. They have to feel safe to do this. If people don't feel safe to do it, they won't do it. And this is really good work for people. So this is where we get into now this other part of this podcast episode where I want to tell you about the future of KI. And when I had this insight, if you can just tell you a story here, I did 10 blogs in about, it felt like 2 days because it just came out of me. And AI helped me synthesize the information. But what I came out of that changed because I already had had the transformation, but I didn't have the full context because I hadn't checked into all these other fields. I went to archaeology, sociology, and to see how are they dealing with the suffering in the area, the discipline, like because it's everywhere. And are the researchers motivated by the same? To see how, you know, this has gone on throughout history. And so walking away from that, in one moment I had this insight and I felt like this ecstasy just overcome me. I almost fell to my knees. Because in one moment I saw that it's a simple thing and we overlooked it the whole time. And the KI tools made it simplified, but I needed to go read history to communicate it to you. I needed help. I needed to talk to and hear from these researchers. They helped me, including Freud and the science. And writing these blogs helped me, I think, articulate it. But before I explain it, can I give you a disclaimer? You have to do the work to see this come to fruition. Well, you have to do it. The reason this is coming into the world or to you is because we did the work here. So I don't want this to be just another theory. It's not just a blog. What I'm about to tell you is not a blog. What I'm about to tell you is a key to ending suffering, the framework for it. But it might not sink in the first time because I might not be able to articulate it clearly. It just came up as an insight and I saw the whole thing. Have you ever had an insight like that? Where like the whole thing that I had been working on just got clear. And then the following came up for me. I'm going to try to describe it to you, but I need you to visualize for me. And I want you to start by visualizing an iceberg. This is different than what we've talked about before here. Visualize an iceberg for me where the tip of the iceberg is pretty big, and then, but under the water is just massive. And just look at that for a second in awareness. My only real critique of Donald Hoffman is I think he should do transformative work because I think he's brilliant. He would add so much to humanity. And so it's a friendly critique because I'm a fan and I want him on my podcast because I want to thank him for what I'm about to explain to you. Because he was the last one that helped me. He was like the, right there when I saw him and heard him, it was like, oh, of course. He explained this thought experiment. And this is what led, this thought experiment led him to his discovery, what he goes around everywhere and talks about, Donald Hoffman. He says it like this. Reality is like a virtual headset. It's just a convenient tool is all it is. Time and space is just that. It's like goggles that you have on, like the pixels on a screen. You don't see the coding, that all that or any of that. You just see what you see. It's very non-dual in that way. But he focuses on evolution. And they studied evolution. So one way that they studied it is just to see how humans have adapted to either choose consciously or unconsciously or not to adapt. In other words, they have to have, there has to be some mechanism of choice or something's happening for survival. So they wanted to know is like, do humans, do they make choices based on like, well, let me look at this situation and see it how it really is. And then if I can see it how it is, then I can take action. So let's say that that's choice A that represents seeing truth or reality as it is. That's A. And in the thought experiment, the other choice B was just something that would provide safety, survival, maybe comfort. And they did it. They set up the experiment so that they could, I think, tap into the unconscious is what's going on here. And that implicates directly repression. But he didn't study that, and that's my critique. Because if he would do his own work, he would see where a lot of this comes from. And that's my critique. But listen, it's beautiful what they found. And so helpful for KI. I mean, I almost want to cry and hug him. Because what they found is that the number of times, so to speak, that humans choose reality versus safety or survival is zero. So that never happens. Because we couldn't survive then. All we needed to do was to experience what we needed to experience to survive. So food, water, shelter, stories, suffering, culture, beliefs, shadows, politics, anything. Just, you know, we're not experiencing reality. It's a duality that gets created in non-dual terms. But what I took from that was not that he was showing us sort of some non-dual, because that's my experience, directly non-dual. It was, wow. So when I go and talk about, this is the catch right here. I actually took this to AI, because you know, you can dialogue with ChatGPT. It's very intelligent. It has logic and it has the whole database available, studies and everything. And I said, so AI, I just saw Donald Hoffman's thought experiment. I'm quite troubled by it. But I want to learn. I said, you know, what I've been doing is going on to social media and talking about emotional repression. And I'm noticing that it's different than when I was just a non-duality teacher or I talked about presence or enlightenment. People just don't come as much, I notice. And I think that the work that I'm doing, I dictated all of this into AI. I said, I think that the work that I'm doing now is so much more helpful. I am totally free. I live in abundance and love and creativity and bliss a lot, actually. Not full on, but just energy that doesn't end. And I explained my experience. And I said, when I just woke up to presence, I didn't have this experience. I had initial shift and then I had this stuff happen. And then I said, but you know what? I think I was always choosing the bypass. And I said, when you look at Donald Hoffman's experiment, isn't that what everyone else is doing? That even if I go out there and if I have the best modality, I'm not saying I do, but even if so, if this is not safe, people will always choose something else, right, AI? And it said 100%. That's Donald Hoffman, according to his theory. So in other words, if I'm presenting this by saying, hey, here's your darkness first. The thing you're scared of the most first, you can't even help it. Many people, from an evolutionary standpoint, you have to keep bypassing. Now, my God, there's so much compassion just washes over me when I've seen this, and I always had compassion, but compassion for me, for my, still I'm learning, and I was just kind of leading in a way that I didn't know wasn't reaching a lot of you. And had I known that it was actually making you feel unsafe, I would do it differently. Because what I was trying to do, I thought that if I presented it as it was, like this is how it is, we're bearing emotions. But I realized that we humans, we don't want to see that. And it's the same reason as a teacher, even though people came, being a non-duality teacher was not as popular as being like, you know, a positive thinking coach. Because between positive thinking and non-duality, well, humans have to choose at first maybe the positive thinking. It's safer. That non-duality is scary. And then to think that, well, beyond non-duality, we can embody it by going to our buried emotions. No, I can't choose that in that thought experiment. I see that now. It's like, that's what I didn't do. I never chose the truth or freedom of processing buried emotions because I was always choosing safety because, and this is what's missing from Hoffman's research, because I had repression. And this is also a big critique because he misses this and history has shown it. From Freud all the way to the current science to the trauma research, Bessel van der Kolk, to Ken Wilber, to KI, to so many other people, so many studies now, that for him to divorce the pleasure-pain principle from the foundational thinker Freud. And I think that, look, Donald, you can't say that this is just evolution because as far back as there's been humans, there's been intergenerational trauma. We weren't just looking for food. We were looking for love and safety in our relationships, and we're suffering, and we're creating a dualistic world. A lot of it is because of our emotional experience. And we're surviving in our relationships, not because we're going to physically die if we're our authentic self. So, you know, Donald, you have to get off the evolutionary kick because people are suffering. And it's deterministic to say, well, it's evolution or it's just, this is how it is. He doesn't really say that. He talks about the non-dual traditions and the possibility, I assume, for transformation, but he downplays it. When anybody downplays transformation or buried emotions, I think, come on, like, we have to have a more connected conversation throughout history. This is one consciousness, it really is. We're not individuals, really, ultimately. From a higher understanding, this is consciousness evolving, but we're not communicating. There's no communication because of the repression. There's a separation. And I think that as a researcher, a therapist, a spiritual teacher, or anyone who assumes the role of trying to explain to other people in some way what reality is or ending suffering, you have to do your own work. It's actually really misleading if you don't. But Donald, thank you, because what you taught me is that I needed to be taught how to teach, but more importantly, how to reach people. And so I want to be really transparent. And so if you see the message change, come back to this and remember that this was the time that I announced it, and you now know why. Because I don't want to put out a modality in the world that you'll never choose. Because then you won't be free. So once I did all that blogging, I just sat with it for a few days. And, you know, I knew that something was coming. This was before the ecstasy insight. But it wasn't forming for me. Because I had to blog. I had to put it out. I was journaling. Like, that on the medium is me personally journaling, even though there's scientific studies. Because for me, I'm not a separate self. It's like I'm journaling myself. Like, I want to hear what this part of me says. I want to hear what this part of me says. What does this branch of science say? That's me too. I mean, if you think of it this way, how will we ever wake up if we don't include all these? And that's integral or integrated. But in the end, we have to have a perspective that somehow makes sense with all these. And I feel like that there's one coming. And there already is a good KI framework, but if you will give me another half an hour here, which goes on beyond longer than I usually do, I really want to explain to you what we're doing in the future, because this insight was beyond the ecstasy. Was after that, it was I've been so, not that I wasn't at peace, but so at peace, because this was the only thing in my life, I think, that was the holdout. It's like, how do I express this to people? You know? And it wasn't creating any suffering. It was just like, there's just something I'm just not seeing. So let me explain it to you. I'm going to give myself a half an hour. And I have to say that because I've never explained this publicly, I can't promise to do it really articulately. And I think that many of you, or some of you, because when I explain it to people, they fog out, which means it's pointing really directly to something. So come back and listen if you find yourself like distracted, because that's the repression keeping you safe. And you don't think you want to do that for this. Maybe you do. All right, here it goes. Even though Freud perhaps discovered it and announced it to us, that emotional repression is the driver of the pleasure-pain principle, for me, he didn't explain it as clearly as Anna Lembke, L-E-M-B-K-E, author of Dopamine Nation. Okay, remember, I can only love you if I can disagree with you. That's in all my relationships. So I love her. I do. And I've sat and listened to her, and I'm like, thank you, universe, for her. Because she'll just explain evolution in a way that's just like Hoffman. Explains really complicated. And that's why when you hear me critique, don't think I'm not a groupie, because I am. And not an unhealthy way. I want her on here, and I would say thank you. And thank you, Anna, for also suggesting that people process their buried emotions. That's actually a very mature viewpoint. And I would say my critique is just that you don't emphasize it enough, and people won't be able to end suffering if you don't. Because saying that everything is dopamine, like she says, is deterministic. It's like saying there's nothing I can do about it, when there is something because of neuroplasticity that we can do about it. But let me explain, having criticized her there, let me explain her brilliance in helping us understand the pain-pleasure principle. And she explains better than I do. But when we were our ancestors, we had to work really hard and experience pain, distress, anxiety before we get like a small amount of reward. Food or something like that. And that's how we were conditioned. And so, of course, in the modern society, it's different. Without any work, you could just get cocaine delivered. And that's obviously hurting us, but that's not the topic here. Just understanding that that's how we were conditioned. So right now, here, our lives, consciousness, that's what's going on. Which means when you think about addiction, it would be, I'm going to seek pleasure because I'm avoiding pain. And then when I get the pleasure, the system produces pain again so that you go back to the pleasure. The pleasure is safety, it's survival. Now, if you understand that, that's really simple. And it just isn't that intellectual. It's like a third grader could get it. Go back and rewind it. Just let me say it again. Just keep it simple. This is evolutionary from her standpoint. It's actually trauma, but she knows it. But she talks about it as if it's divorced from repression, and that's a problem because that's divorced from Freud and the science. But still, think about it this way, because it works this way. It's like if you, in your relationship, if you need love, whether you're aware of it or not, because it's buried with the buried emotions, but it drives you. And so there's you seeking pleasure. It's, you know, it's safety, it's survival, it's not just pleasure. It's, if you get love, you might get your need met. Well, then your system produces suffering in the form of beliefs, shadows, identities, some relational stuff. And then because of this suffering, you have to get your needs met again. Get love, stay safe somehow, get approval. And then it's you're in a cycle and you're caught in it. The key to remember, the takeaway is this. Are you ready? Processing anything but buried emotions reinforces the cycle. I'll explain it. I lived it. So when I didn't process anger, when my first husband would trigger me, there's the pain. Now the pain I didn't know was coming from, like Freud said, buried anger. So what I did is I would process just the thing on the surface. I didn't know I had anger buried. I didn't get to the root of the pain pleasure thing here, the suffering. So by processing something on the surface and getting temporary relief, it's like kicking in that survival response. I feel good for a while and then back to suffering. And then I have to process it again, feel better, and then more suffering. Oh, shit. That's the bypass. The bypass is survival. It's I have to stay safe and get love. From a you know, like attachment theory standpoint, it's needs or early childhood experiences, needs for love, approval, safety, where we didn't find it within ourselves. And we had to develop into this ego that can't get angry and that is false, right? But think about it simply in relationship, how it functions, suffering functions in a very simple way. It's simpler than identity, but it's very unconscious. So in a trigger, I wasn't aware of this whole mechanism. What I was aware of is like, and this is a distraction. Oh, he said that about me. I'm hurt and I'm unlovable. And so that was me staying safe. That's evolution too. If I can identify with that, which is safer than the buried anger, which feels terrifying, now I've got my safety or my pleasure. But because I don't get to the root, even that would bring about more suffering because it wasn't authentic. It was an identification with hurt and an identity. I'm unlovable, which served a purpose from an evolutionary standpoint. I survive as a separate self. See that? And so I kept in that cycle and then chronic pain got created. Now, from repression. Now, how would that be part of it? Yes, any addictions could be pain, pleasure, but forget that for a second. It's deeper. When the system produces pain from buried emotions, like science says, we're safe. Not from feeling pain, but from feeling and expressing the anger. So we're, from the standpoint of the nervous system, we're benefiting from pain. That's why it's there. Or depression. I don't expect you to believe that because you have to do the work in your body to see it. But science is pointing us to it. Maybe you do see it. I don't want to insult your insights. But pain is, again, it's, I think we just have a superficial view of it. Of course, once I had pain, I became dependent for a little bit on medication and other nervous system regulation things. That's because there was the pain created by the anger repression, again, and then medicating the pain. But because I didn't get to the root, the anger repression, more pain came, had to go to medication. Do you see the simple mechanism that we created ourselves? We can't get out of the loop of addiction either, usually very well. We substitute over to get our needs met to another one. And then we keep creating suffering from repression. Now we're just addicted not to alcohol, but porn or whatever else. Okay, but it goes deeper than that again, because even if I'm not addicted, I'm still a product of repression, trauma, evolution. So let's say the way that I stay safe in a trigger or in my relationship is through avoidance, attachment style. This is why the attachment styles, which came from the lineage of Freud, were great. And limited because they didn't say that it was connected. Again, it was a disconnected conversation, in my view, between the attachment theory folks and Freud, even though I think he was dead. Because the conversation should have gotten into whether our attachment styles are connected to repression. And they are. We should have checked into our bodies, or we should now. And we should at least include Freud because he's been right over and over. So we found it here. The attachment styles are connected to repression in a simple way. If I'm an anger repressor, I might have to get away from you, avoid attachment. There's conditioning in the body that demands it, mainly because I'm afraid of conflict and therefore vulnerability, which could bring conflict. But that's anger repression connected inseparably to an attachment style. And it's like that for all attachment styles. So once you understand that, everything is connected to repression, like Freud said and the science is saying. Now, how do you work with attachment style, understanding it's just still pain, pleasure, simple? Well, again, if I get away, I'm benefiting. That's safe, survival, disconnect from people. Why? Because of the pain, the anger repression. And getting away doesn't solve it. It's temporary, but still, it solves it enough that my system can produce more pain so I can stay in that attachment style. That keeps the separation alive, the suffering, but it keeps me in that survival mode. The same is true for all the attachment styles. I don't want to go through them. Instead, I want to come back to this iceberg. And I want you to understand that all I'm doing right now is just painting a picture that will lead you to practice. So the iceberg is not the practice. I'm going to bring it up just to kind of paint a more, a better picture of how this is working. So what Freud said is that the repression is driving it all. So on the iceberg, the repression is under the water. There are mind-body programs buried responsible for anger repression, sadness repression, and hurt repression. That's fear, frozen fear. All of that, for purposes of this conversation, is under the water. This is just for purposes of communicating this. Everything else is above the water. There's a reason for that. We are most unconscious around repression. We're more unconscious around repression than we are the suppressing of things. In other words, repression happens outside of our consciousness when we're kids. Suppression doesn't. It's like feeling something and pushing it down. So repression is the thing that we're most afraid of. Understanding that, it needs to go under the water. But it's not our only fear. It's just the core fear, or one of them, along with the fear of getting hurt, rejected, and all that, which comes later in the process. But just thinking about it like the iceberg, buried anger under the water, fear of anger. At the surface, you're going to see things like attempts to seek pleasure. Well, you could say survival. Suffering is survival. You may not know that, but your stories aren't true. Your belief systems aren't ultimately true. This is how we survive. We project a world of duality out there, and we think it's just real. But we don't realize that it's a reflection of the unconsciousness that we carry. So we're dreaming up the world, and we're suffering. But the suffering keeps us safe from the buried emotions. So think about it this way. The very act of believing you're not good enough serves this pleasure-pain cycle, because not good enough is safety compared to under the water. So if the thought experiment gave people a choice between, do you want to believe you're not good enough on the one side, and on the other side, do you want to feel and express anger to your loved ones? It doesn't matter what your conscious mind says. Your unconscious will choose the safer route, which is, I'll just believe I'm not good enough. And that's exactly what we see in inquiry, is that people get hung up on childhood identities that aren't true because they can't see that there's emotions that they buried under it. It's a simple thing. So just understanding, just keeping it simple here, that it's safer, that we will always choose believing I'm a victim, unlovable, some version of an ego, there's something wrong with me, deficiency story. We will always choose that. You could say from an evolutionary standpoint, Anna Lemke, but really from emotional repression, Freud. And if you see that, then the map becomes a way to let your practice come to life by understanding it. You have to do the skills to truly grok this. Let me see if I can explain it. The first place, I didn't find this through the research. I found this through inquiry. The research just helped me articulate it, but it happened for me with addictions, because I was mesmerized, you could say, around seeing that things that had nothing to do, it seemed, with anger were all about anger buried. I mean, all suffering is like that with the repression, but addiction was really, I don't know, weird to me, because first of all, I don't remember being mad at my dad because I buried it. And when I would go for like addictions, there was just no feeling of anger, but there was always pain and suffering. That's why I would use. It's just baffling that the whole time that I was using, it was the pain was anger repression. Well, until you understand that repression is the missing experience and the driver. But what I mean is I had trouble linking that up because of just how that doesn't make any sense. And it stopped my practice for a while or slowed it down because there's such a reward with addiction. It's survival. So with the development of this deeper understanding, which started in practice for me years ago and just culminated into these blogs and this, what I saw was a direct link between using something that I've had an addiction to and being angry at dad. And it's like that for you. It might not be buried anger, but it's something like that, a buried emotion and fear around that. And basically our consciousness is just doing everything it can to make sure we don't see it so that the survival happens of the separate self and the suffering. But once you see it, you can really use it. So imagine that the iceberg is like, at the tip is, well, I want to use this pain. I want to drink this beer. That's something conscious at the tip. It's like going into a bar, but maybe you have a history of drinking and a compulsion. Well, at the surface, then you've got pain under the water. That's why the compulsion is there. You're in pain, but you may not know where the pain comes from. You may not know that you have buried sadness, for example. So you're in the bar and all you're aware of is like, I really have to drink a beer. Well, we help you make conscious the compulsion behind that that's rooted in the body, but only to help you see, well, that's because your pain is that you have repressed hurt. And that's not something that you're going to see in most any spiritual practice until you start to make conscious buried emotions. But then once you do, there's a direct link. I'm drinking this beer because I'm hurt by dad. I can't express it. I'm drinking this beer because I'm hurt by mom and I can't express it. It's that direct. And I saw it first, but it didn't make any sense. So I was like, how can I go out there and say that to people? Because even though it works in practice directly, I don't think that because of the waterline being a repression barrier, how are people going to see that? And I noticed that people have to do a little bit of work to see it, but then it's there. So that was the first area that it came in where I saw this can be really simple. This is just something appears and it's connected right to the pain that we're avoiding. And if we don't get to the repression, that repression creates more pain and then we go back to the suffering. And then we do the same thing on the avoidant spiritual path. We go for relief, but we don't go for the relief that gets to buried emotions. So it's like the thought experiment. We keep choosing the safety, even if though we want freedom or truth or reality. And we're just going to keep doing that until we make conscious the chooser, which is the conditioning of repression. An unprocessed fear, just to use a word, it's repression. There's more to it, but. And then what else came, so as part of this, because as one thing comes, the whole thing comes sometimes. It was like the best way to communicate, if we ever become telepathic, will just be we can express ideas immediately to each other. The full ideas. That's how insight is, if it's a really good insight. That's how, you know, somebody asked me about the aliens experience that I had, or where I was in consciousness doing inquiry, and I felt these beings communicating to me. And they were communicating things to me that I didn't know and didn't understand, or it was like voices I'd never heard, seeing something I'd never seen before, like a bunch of rungs going up one rung after the other, and all the beings could see down, but no row of beings could see up. And they were trying to convey to me that's just how consciousness works in the universe, that you can only see what you can see. And then until you embody that consciousness, you don't have all the insight, of course, that you need to like thrive and be and evolve and be free. And, you know, what I say is like, I don't know if that was real. I don't even care about that. It was helpful. So helpful, because it's just like any insight. To me, the whole thing, and somebody said, well, why don't you talk about that more, that experience? Because I don't have much more to say about it. It's like, that was an insight, and then nothing was conveyed to me. And then what was conveyed, though, I heard the voice said, you'll know it when you're ready. When something's there, you'll come out. And then I just dropped it. Now, that could just been psychologically, like hallucinogenic, because I was in a lot of pain. Or it could have been something, but I don't want to get involved in the, are there, I got things I want to do. I want to talk about suffering and consciousness. So how I would talk about that is, imagine that we were living on a different planet and we were beings and we have a completely different experience. Like, we don't repress emotions and we're very conscious and embodied beings. We would have already had to have worked through whatever trauma collectively or intergenerationally that we have together to be that evolved. And just thinking of it that way helped me understand and kind of come back to earth and realize that not a single child has any real hope in a way until we evolve, until we start taking the processing of buried emotions more seriously, because we're just transferring our trauma over to our kids constantly and we're stuck in this. And I bring out the other civilization so you can know that consciousness can evolve and we're just at a certain stage. And if we don't see that there's something greater and not, don't connect it to belief systems though. I don't sit here and need to think and believe in aliens. This is consciousness. If they came, we are them. They are us. That's the teaching of it. But what can we learn from just knowing that we're in this state of consciousness? Well, I envision, just have fun with me. Somebody asked me to bring this topic back. Okay, well, let's do it then. Let's use it as something that helps. If they saw us, there's no way I can imagine that they could make contact with us. Because look at what we're doing. We're just creating suffering that isn't here. Because we have unprocessed emotions and trauma. And then we think that they're going to come and make contact with us. Would you make contact with a species that was very aggressive and scared and traumatized and thought that they were the highest one, and then you're just going to walk up on them and explain to them? I don't think so. In fact, the more I've gotten free, the more I realize that everyone has, in every species, every life form has their own sovereign space. And that I don't have a right to go to, and nor would I, to somebody I have power over or a species. And I think we just learned that. That's the trauma. We don't hurt each other that way. We don't do that when we evolve. We're not out to hurt each other. And they see us, I'm sure, as a species that either is hurting themselves, anger repressors, or hurting other people. We might not know why we're doing it, but if they've evolved, they know why. And I can see why. It's because that's what's going on. We're conditioned to hurt ourselves and experience pain and then seek the remedy of that. But because we believe we're separate, we can never get out of it. And we just keep experiencing pain. That makes for a dangerous creature who's just in survival mode. That's not something that they want to just interface with, you can imagine, unless they think that we have the kind of consciousness that can handle it. And that's as much as I'll say about that, because I don't know any of that, and I'm not here to form or try to get you to believe anything. I think it's all just a teaching tool to help us understand that we're just here, and this is how we're suffering. And simplify it to: the pain is under the water. You're creating it, the repression. You seek relief by trying to get your needs met. I need love, approval, safety. It's driving you everywhere. And then you can never get them met because your system produces more pain and suffering. And then you go look for it again and again. And it's not just addiction to like drugs. It's validation. It's approval. It's coming onto social media, not for authentic reasons, but like as a helper or a teacher who's trying to get their needs met, trying to get love and approval and doesn't know it. And again, misleading other people, but it's not hard because everybody chooses safety anyway. And that's how I was misleading people, is I didn't understand that that's what we're programmed for this. I knew it, but I didn't see it. And so I mislead people. I did, by having repressed emotions, the driver of suffering, and therefore no consciousness how suffering is really created. And yet I was teaching. That's an example of a being who still is trying to survive, trying to get his needs met. from pain, pain, pleasure, principle. I don't have that pain. I don't suffer. I'm here to help now. I'm sorry it took me so long. But that's how it goes. It goes that way when you're suffering and you're getting something out of it. So let me just spend the last 10 minutes or less, five maybe, explaining what that I think that means for KI. Because I think it means a lot. It really does. Because AI has encouraged me to, and my team, but mostly me and AI having this little conversation and saying, what am I doing here? And it's like saying, well, you're playing into it. I know that buried emotions create suffering. There's the science, but human beings are choosing safety and survival. So reword it. It's authenticity. It's feeling your true emotions. It really is. And I just need to talk about it that way because I don't want to scare people out of transformation. I don't mind provoking them because sometimes a trigger will make them want to see where the suffering comes from. But making people feel like that it's not even safe to choose KI. Wow. If I did that for anyone, I'm sorry. I didn't intend that. Because this has been the most beautiful thing that I've ever been involved with. And it's been anything but scary. I mean, there have been times when I'm processing, of course, when I'm feeling the rage towards dad and I don't want to feel it. But there's the relief in that when you're skillful. So what it means is that our social media will change because it's not because it's a strategy, it's a change. I'm fundamentally changed by this seeing that I don't want to sit and talk to people and keep encouraging them to make that one choice in the thought experiment and then I can't reach them. That's disconnected in itself. And it's also going to change the modality because it's going to make it more skillful. The very context that we have publicly that I just explained to you will be exactly like the practice, which is already like that. We take you to the repression each time when you see you're trying to get your needs met or producing suffering, the pleasure pain principle. And I also think another area that this is going to change, the third area, is dialogue, interdisciplinary conversations, maybe even here on this podcast, or if people will invite me on their podcast, can I tell you that I'll be very respectful? Because people know that I don't repress anger, and so I don't like being false. Like, I don't like sitting there and going, oh, really? And like getting your love. I just can't. And so I won't do that, but I'm always respectful. Because if I invite someone like Anna Lemke here or Donald Hoffman, I'll be like, thank you. I'll be gushing for a moment. But then we'll get down to it and I'll say, look, all I'm asking you to do is consider that this research, consider that your body may hold something. That, Donald, if reality is a virtual headset, then the code is hidden in the body. And can you just listen to it? And let me explain it to you and see if you can begin to take on that perspective too. Because it doesn't change your perspective. It just adds to it. Just like yours added to mine, Donald. Yours was instrumental in this. Same with Anna Lemke. I want to have interdisciplinary conversations, like connected conversations. I would say thank you for suggesting people buried emotions. But don't you think the focus on dopamine, even though it's correct, is one, deterministic, and two, it doesn't match the neuroplasticity or Bessel van der Kolk or Freud, that a lot of the pleasure pain principle is the repression. And we now know that repression drives addiction. So why would you say dopamine, even though that's part of it, it's all connected. But what can people do with dopamine compared to what they could do with buried emotions that they can process? Dopamine, we don't experience it in awareness. It's there in every experience or most experiences. But if we can't feel it, touch it, taste it, witness it, then it becomes a construct that maybe scientists can see and study, but we're left helpless in deterministic viewpoints like that because here we are suffering. And then belief systems and understandings aren't enough to end suffering. Transformation, not just information. Wow, it's nice to get that out, and then just the silence came. So I guess that means that's it. Well, this is a new day. It really is. I feel that because I think it's just going to be easier for me to articulate it going forward. If I can use this podcast episode as a starting point, and then I'm going to build on it and try to make it simpler and more accessible. And if you're interested in coming and doing, I'm doing a beta run on this. What that means is seeing this differently, the practice has changed. It's just become more streamlined. And so if you want to be a part of that beta run, before we make it officially the work, that's what I'm doing now with people. I've been doing it, but not really announcing it. But now I feel like announcing it and saying, if you want to come and everything you've heard here, if you want it to come to life with skills, I will not be doing it necessarily in the jumpstart. I don't know yet because I want to experiment with it more in one-on-one and customize it because everybody's experience is different. So I encourage anybody who wants to do it to click on the link to come and talk to me for free about one-on-one, my 90-day intensive. Excuse me. And that's where I will talk to you about it and say more about it and see if you're interested. And if this version of KI is just the beta that we're doing is not something you're interested in, you can go to the Jumpstart group and you get KI, which was also already great. I mean, really, it didn't need any improvement. People say that. But, it does, though. It needs more clarity. It needs simplicity. And we need to articulate it in a way where you don't keep choosing survival when you listen or bypass. I hope this helps. Thank you.